Welcome to Discovery, Cedars-Sinai's podcast about research and education. I'm your host, Dr. Corey Cross. Today, we'll be discussing why translational research is key in autoimmune diseases. To discuss this topic, we are joined by Dr. Francesco Boyne, who is the Director of the Division of Rheumatology and the Director of the Scleroderma Program at the Cal Autoimmunity Institute. Dr. Boyne, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Corey. It is a great pleasure to be here today. I hope we can provide to our audience some feedback on what's happening at Cedars-Sinai in the field of autoimmunity and rheumatology.
I think that would be awesome. So I would love to know a little bit about you. I know you study scleroderma. How did you become interested in treating scleroderma?
Yes. So scleroderma is a very challenging disease that really has a significant burden in terms of morbidity and unfortunately also mortality. And so when I became a rheumatology fellow at Johns Hopkins, I was presented different opportunities of studying and developing clinical expertise. And I always loved complexity. I always loved the intricacies of the immune system and figuring out in autoimmunity how the immune system suddenly go crazy and start to attack our own body. And so it was very intuitive to me that scleroderma was the biggest challenge. I grew up on the mountain climbing and challenging difficult paths. So I decided to embark into this topic and both clinically and also on the bench doing research, studying autoimmunity and patients with this condition.
Now, what makes scleroderma so difficult to both treat and study?
Precisely its complexity. So in general, systemic autoimmune disorders can affect any organ of the body. And scleroderma truly is the epitome of a disease that can present in any organ and a different time point. And so the approach has to be open to detect any hint that the disease is present and is developing. And unfortunately, early on, it may be very subclinical. You don't have a lot of ways to detect it early. And so by the time it becomes clinically active, the damage in the affected organ is already very advanced. And so I think the clinical heterogeneity is a big challenge. And then it's not just one disease process. It can have features of inflammation. There is a component of fibrosis or scar tissue that is building up. And then there is a vasculopathy, so the blood vessels are affected throughout the body, creating a different pattern. Every patient is unique. Every patient is different. And you have to be able to really understand in that specific patient what are the challenges, what are the organ affected. So it's a lot of investigative work. But that's also why it's a fascinating disease to really face and work on.
Yeah, scleroderma is one of those diseases that reminds us that the body is actually all connected, that it's one giant machine, as opposed to ways sometimes that we look at it in medicine as compartmentalized, and you have your digestive tract or you've got your respiratory system. Scleroderma is one of those diseases that reminds us that what's happening in one place is affecting what's happening someplace else, and that there's certain things that weave through the entire body. So I agree with you. It's a very fascinating disease.
Absolutely. And also in terms of when the treatments, right? It's not a single treatment that does it all. That's the other challenge. We have to accept multiple treatments for different organs, and often in combination, and to deal with the side effects of medications that can be good for one problem, but then they cause more issues on another side of the body. So big challenge. Again, that's also why we decided to invest on creating a scleroderma center to really be able to focus and develop expertise in the clinical care of this complex disease.
So tell me, we're going to discuss translational research, and that's a newer term. Could you tell our listeners what's meant by translational research?
Yeah, so translational research, it's a focus on research activities that start from the patient, from observing the clinical disease as it manifests in the patients, and then bring that observation into the lab to generate questions and hypotheses, but encompasses a team of investigators that range from those who sees the patient in clinic, those who sort of aggregate patients into cohorts, and those who will study mechanism of disease in the lab, with the idea that the outcome, the output of this type of research, it's usable, readily usable, back to the clinic, back to really improve the care of the patient and possibly to find a cure.
So basically, it's removing that boundary that the lab is done in the lab and the doctor sees the patient, but sort of bringing those two together so that the people doing the research are actually interacting with the patient, and therefore the research goes back to the patient.
Yes, absolutely. I always, when I have to explain this to my fellows, or many years ago, there was a big dichotomy on the research that was done on the bench, on mice models, and then the research that was done in the clinical setting. The typical example is cancer. We're successful in curing cancer in mice, but we still struggle to cure it in human. And the reason is that human disease is very heterogeneous, has a lot of variations, is not predictable or like limited to a mouse model that is predictable. And so I think that's where the translational research comes into place, to really put together both the clinical aspect of the disease and the research. What's important is that this has been informing the transformation of research into what we call precision medicine. Precision medicine being that precisely because we realize and know that every patient is unique, also in studying them, we need to have tools that allow us to understand what's the uniqueness of how the disease is manifesting in one patient or one subset of patients versus another. And that actually is a smart way to learn what are the disease processes, what are the unique features of the underlying biology of the disease that can be targeted effectively and not just treating the disease as a whole. Because within it, you know, I always said scleroderma is an umbrella. Within that umbrella, you have patients who have lung disease, patients who have gut disease, patients who have kidney disease. And somebody has acute disease, somebody has chronic disease. Somebody has a lot of inflammation, somebody has a little bit of inflammation, more scarring. So I think the notion of translational medicine is really bringing us now the energies and the interest in developing personalized discovery and treatments.
And I think to your point, autoimmune diseases in particular are something that really play out differently in every person's body. How your immune system works and reacts and then progresses through these autoimmune diseases, it's a very individualized disease. And so to understand how the treatments are going to work, the translational research really makes sense in this setting.
Absolutely. And scleroderma is a perfect example, right? So it's a disease where we still don't have an effective cure, meaning the disease is not curable. Compared to other rheumatological disorder, like, for example, rheumatoid arthritis or lupus, we are a little behind identifying what we call disease-modifying treatment, meaning treatment that in a remarkable way changed the course of the disease, put the disease into remission. We still don't have good medication for that. And so I think it pushes us as investigators to think outside of the box, to be more creative and to really use the tool of modern medicine and research to identify the uniqueness of this disease, to really tailor better treatment or combination treatment that finally bring us to the clinic and say, hey, we have a way to stop this disease. We have a way to really reverse some of the damage that it has caused so far. That's what drives all the effort that we're putting in place here at Cedars-Sinai on scleroderma and other autoimmune disorders.
So Cedars-Sinai has created an entire autoimmunity institute. It's the COW Autoimmunity Institute. And I'm just curious, what has been the most exciting, significant research you've done to date?
Yeah, so I think there are themes in terms of diseases that we are focusing on in the Autoimmunity Institute from the rheumatological perspective. And these are mainly scleroderma and rheumatoid arthritis. The plan is really to grow, and we are starting to investigate lupus in a more substantial way. The idea is for us first to understand better how the disease affects specific tissues. You know, a lot of research is done by taking blood samples and looking how the blood cells are behaving, and that's very important. But sometimes what you see in the blood does not necessarily correspond to how the disease then takes place into affected tissues. So, for example, in scleroderma, we definitely want to define what we call the microenvironment, meaning understanding what's unique within the skin of scleroderma patient or the lung of scleroderma patient that makes this organ fail and or being so heavily damaged by the disease process. I think that's where having a strong clinical center of excellence is important, because we have high volume of patients with different manifestation. We can have important samples. And this is very humbling that almost 100% of our patients wants to participate into our research efforts and then bring that to the lab where we can look more specifically with the tools that now science is giving us. And Cedars-Sinai is really at the avant-garde of modern technology to be able to handle, on one side, the unique cells. We can take cell by cell on a tissue and look what's in that cell that is different from normal cells. But also bring this at the scale of hundreds and hundreds of patients means data that are old days we were not able to process. And now we have the infrastructure and the system to really handle this high throughput data to give us going from the single cells to the cohort to the general population and understanding what's important and what's not.
No, you make a really good point. In your opinion, what does the future of caring for patients with autoimmune disorders look like? Where are we headed?
I think the trajectory should be similar to what happened to cancer, right? All the therapeutic protocol in cancer were revolving around what kind of cancer that was, what kind of tissue. You know, you had treatment for lung cancer, treatment for breast cancer or prostate cancer. And then at some point in cancer, they realized, wait a minute, but there are some features within each cancer that are similar, and they develop novel drugs, these novel immunotherapies. They are not directed to a specific cancer, are directed to unique abnormalities into genetic mutations or unique disease processes that are more active in a given cancer tissue, but they can be the same in breast cancer or lung cancer. And with this, they enhance efficacy, more targeted, less toxic therapy. And so in autoimmunity is similar. Now we have protocols for each disease, but I think in virtue of the studies that we're doing and other colleagues are doing across the world, I would say, certainly with the United States being an important place for this type of research, we're identifying unique features for inflammation, unique features for how these autoimmune diseases happen and then propagate, and then develop therapies that are specific to these kind of biological processes more than the disease as a general category. I think that's what we're trying to accomplish. The promise is we're going to be more targeted. We're going to be more specific. We're going to minimize the side effects, the harm that we have to do by treating these patients with these diseases, and then increasing efficacy. We really strive to find a cure for these dreadful diseases.
Well, that, and also I think that what you're really explaining is that as opposed to looking at the end organ damage or the end points, what we're hoping to do is to really see that it all stems from the immune system and your body's inflammation process or your body's response to a virus or whatever that sets these things off. And then what's the cascade that happens and how does that work? And I would say that what's amazing about what you're describing is that not only will we be more efficient, but hopefully we'll be able to catch it at an earlier time point so that we don't progress to those points where you see the end organ damage. And even more so, is there something we can do then once we see what's happening to actually prevent it, like that we can just keep backtracking until we can really have something modifiable as opposed to just putting Band-Aids on?
Yeah, absolutely. So that's a very important point you're making. There is another area of research that we will be developing, it's already happening, which is early detection. And the idea to identify patients who are very early in the disease, almost if they haven't yet developed the full spectrum of manifestations. And there are criteria to detect these early patients. And those would be precious. One, to study what's the evolution, how does the disease unfold, but also to understand in the early stages what's active in their body to drive the disease. And second, to tailor treatments that are not more preventive, meaning does it make sense to treat somebody that are at high risk in a year or 2 years to have full-blown disease? And it was interesting, our colleagues in the UK did a survey on scleroderma patients, and they told them, if you were told that in 5 years you will have definite scleroderma, would you be willing to enter a clinical trial now for some treatment, mild treatment, but that can prevent developing scleroderma? And 80% of the patients say absolutely yes. So it tells you that there is interest both on the physician side, but also on the stakeholders, and most importantly on the patients, to really get to the disease early, prevent things before they become irreversible, that the damage becomes irreversible.
That's amazing. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Boyne. This has been such an interesting conversation for me. I've really enjoyed it.
Oh, it's been my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me here today.
If you enjoyed this episode and would like to learn more about the groundbreaking research being done at Cedars-Sinai, visit cedars-sinai.org/discoveries. At cedars-sinai.org/discoveries, you can read all the stories in the Cedars-Sinai magazine about research and education. That concludes this episode of Discoveries, Cedars-Sinai's podcast about research and education. If you found this podcast helpful, please share it on your social channels and be sure to check out the entire podcast library for other topics that might be of interest to you. Please remember to subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. Thanks for listening to this episode of Discoveries. I'm your host, Dr. Corey Cross.